Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Grinding to a halt, Omicron's crush of the workforce. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
The Great American Sick Out.
We have the business, we don't have the staff, and so that's really frustrating.
Staff shortages from your pharmacy to your police department. What the two top vaccine makers are saying about a fourth shot and getting people back to work. Testing centers shut down, schools closed, not because of COVID, but the cold. Freezing temperatures sweeping parts of the country. Just how low will it go? At least 17 dead, including 8 children, after a fire rages through a New York City apartment building.
The smoke is what caused the deaths and the serious injuries.
The two major malfunctions that officials say caused the inferno. Threats from one side, low expectations from the other. Wrapping day one of the diplomatic talks between Russia and the U.S. with a possible invasion of Ukraine hanging in the balance. Remembering Bob Saget. Stalking allegations and car thefts. The warnings on how criminals are using Apple's AirTags. And the competition and high cost of moving into the metaverse.
Live from CNBC. The facts. The truth. The news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. This month was supposed to signal a fresh start for the recovering U.S. economy. Businesses were supposed to reopen. Workers supposed to return to office. Remember? Instead, America is calling out sick, and for good reason. Economists predict more than 5 million Americans could be stuck at home, isolating from COVID in the days ahead. The Omicron surge is already leaving many businesses short-staffed and causing major breakdowns in services nationwide. Take Johnson County, Kansas, for example. Paramedics there are working 80-hour weeks because hospitals are so overwhelmed. In New York City, officials are delaying trash and subway service. They just don't have enough workers. And at Phoenix International Airport, officials shut down 2 checkpoints at their busiest terminal because not enough TSA agents showed up to work. Everybody is sick, and the disruptions are widespread. Health experts say it could still be a few weeks before cases peak generally in the United States. Meantime, there's growing talk of a fourth dose in the works. Pfizer and Moderna reporting they're making progress on COVID boosters, specifically to target Omicron. Pfizer's shot could easily be ready as early as March. Here's CNBC's health and science correspondent Meg Terrell.
As the world faces unprecedented numbers of COVID cases amid the Omicron surge, vaccine makers are forging ahead with Omicron-updated shots, should they be needed.
We are discussing with public health leaders around the world to decide what we think is the best strategy for a potential booster for the fall of 2022. We believe it will contain Omicron. mRNAs.
Moderna CEO Stéphane Bancel says boosters in the fall of 2022 may not only target Omicron, but potentially other strains as well. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla says the company's already begun manufacturing some Omicron-targeted vaccine doses, just in case.
This vaccine will be ready in March. I don't know if we will need it. I don't know if and how it will be used. But we'll be ready.
The goal, he says, is much better protection, particularly against infections, because 3 doses of the current vaccines, he says, give reasonable protection against severe disease already. But Bourla notes most governments are increasingly focused on Pfizer's pill for COVID, Paxlovid. Supply is constrained now, but he says it'll grow exponentially through the course of the year, and that many governments are looking to stockpile it. With the pill and the ability to update vaccines, he says he's optimistic COVID can be controlled.
But we will have perfectly normal lives with just injection. We will do it maybe once a year. And the pill that, in case we are sick, will help us make it like a flu-like rather than a life-threatening disease.
Now, we also got some news today on another potential pill for COVID from Gilead. That company makes remdesivir, which is now commonly used in the hospital for COVID patients. That drug recently showed it can reduce the risk of hospitalization or death by almost 90% if it's given early in the course of the disease. But it has to be given through IV infusion over 3 days. The company's CEO told us today they're now starting trials of a tablet form. Shep?
Meg, Omicron-specific vaccines. March? I mean, aren't they saying we're going to peak with Omicron this month and maybe then we've got something we don't even know about?
Yeah, it may be too late for this current surge, particularly in the United States, but it's unclear what's to come later in the year, as you just suggested. There are still a lot of questions to be answered about which strains could be dominant later in the year and how long immunity from infection with Omicron lasts. So all of those answers will tell us more about what the future of this vaccine ends up looking like.
All right, Meg. Meg Terrell, thank you. Weather alert. National Weather Service warning of dangerous cold. AccuWeather reports, get this, 129 million people live in places that will not get above freezing tomorrow. So cold that in Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts, they're closing some COVID testing sites. And the Boston mayor announced today all of that city's public schools will close tomorrow because of the cold. The forecast high there, 12. But with wind chills, meteorologists say it's likely to feel like -8. That would be the coldest for Boston in 3 years. AccuWeather senior meteorologist Adam Del Rosso is with us. He's tracking the freeze. Wind chill, that's a real threat, huh?
It really is, Shep. Just the slightest breeze whisks away the warmth that your body is trying to create. And the numbers we've got now only going to get worse as we head into the overnight hours. We're in the mid-20s from Columbus to New York City into Boston, 0 into Caribou, Maine, International Falls, Minnesota, about 20 below right now. We're dropping down to 4 below in the Twin Cities, 14 in Cleveland, 19 Richmond, New York City, 16 our low temperature tonight, 6 in Portland, couple passing clouds, but there will be some breezes. So AccuWeather real field temperatures into our Tuesday morning, feeling as low as 20, 30, maybe even close to 40 below as you get into northern Maine. Boston going to feel like the teens below zero, single digits below zero for New York City. Pittsburgh, single digits above zero. Not much better. Some of those gusts upwards of 20, 25 miles per hour. Afternoon temperatures, even with some sunshine, not going to rebound much at all. 26 Cleveland, 19 in New York, 10 in Portland. Again, some of the coldest air we've seen in about 4 years. We'll get a little bit of some relief as we head through the middle part of this week, Wednesday into Thursday. Temperatures back up close to where they're supposed to be for the middle of January. But we get toward our Friday and into the weekend. Another push of Arctic air works into the Northeast. That one could come with some snow and ice. So this is a great reminder to download that AccuWeather app. You can track the snow, get the winter cast, and also keep up to date with these temperatures. Notice tomorrow in Boston, 13 for our high. We get back up into the 40s temporarily on Thursday before we're right back down into the 20s and teens as we head into the weekend. Shep?
Spring is a dream. Adam Del Rosso, thank you. An unspeakable tragedy. That from the New York City Mayor Eric Adams. After a fire ripped through an apartment complex yesterday in the Bronx, the new number on the death toll, 17 people, 8 of them children. It's the city's deadliest fire in more than 30 years. Officials say the fire started from a malfunctioning electric space heater that may have been running, they say, for days. The flames destroyed only a small part of this 19-story building, but officials say smoke quickly spread through open doors, darkening stairwells and turning hallways into death traps. New York's fire commissioner says some of the doors should have been self-closing. Now investigators are looking into why they stayed open.
Certainly the stairwell was very dangerous as the door was left open. Some of the floors, certainly on 15, the door was open from the stair to the hall, and the 15th floor became quite untenable. We do recommend in high-rise fireproof buildings that people should shelter in place, and it's safer to be in your apartment than to venture out and try to get down the stairs.
Well, here you can see a firefighter carrying a baby out of the building. The mayor called the firefighters heroes all, saying some of them pushed through the smoke even though their oxygen tanks were empty. Officials say dozens of people were hurt in the fire, at least 15 still critical. CNBC's Valerie Castro in the Bronx tonight.
I did not sleep. I was crying in my sleep. I was shaking.
Bronx residents who survived the apartment fire that killed several of their neighbors spent the night reliving the terrifying scene.
Thank God that we had the duplex, because maybe we have could have died in there with that smoke. It was really bad. I couldn't take it more. I dropped on my knees and started to pray to God and ask God, please help us.
FDNY officials say everything was made worse by a self-closing door that apparently didn't shut, allowing the flames to spread and smothering smoke to seep into almost every floor.
Is there a reason why those doors aren't self-closing?
They are self-closing, but the door on 15 and the door to the fire apartment was not functioning as it should.
Some 200 firefighters arrived to residents screaming for help. The chaos documented by neighbors through Citizen App video.
Oh my God, I'm glad. They just pulled him out and went to the front of the building.
Crews rushed in to rescue families with ladder trucks. One firefighter cradling a baby in his arms.
Oh man, look at this little baby. Bundled up and everything.
I was so scared.
Maddie Diang lives on the 12th floor. She had just left for work when the fire started. Her husband and five children still inside. Firefighters were able to save them, but other neighbors, many African immigrants from Gambia, didn't survive.
We all pray for them because we all family, we all African people live there.
I know one woman in the 10th floor, three children gone. And another African lady in 19th floor, three children is gone.
Shep, even though officials say a space heater is to blame for the fire, the heat was on and working in the building at the time. As for what was apparently that malfunctioning self-closing door, a spokesperson for the building's owner says that there was some maintenance work done to that particular apartment's door sometime last year, an issue with the door locks, but that no other issues were reported since then. Under New York law, all apartment doors must be self-closing, including those leading to hallways and stairwells, so that will certainly be a focus of this investigation.
Such Chef. A tragedy. Valerie Castro, thank you. A standoff over Russia's potential invasion of Ukraine after the first day of diplomatic talks. The United States and Russia meeting in Geneva today. Talks lasted nearly 8 hours, but officials say they didn't make any breakthroughs. Russian officials say they have no plans to invade Ukraine, but they've been building up their military on the shared border. Of course, that buildup has Ukraine and its allies on edge. The country preparing its own troops for a potential invasion. In a moment, we'll have a report from NBC's Richard Engel in eastern Ukraine. But first, CNBC's senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche on those diplomatic talks. Kayla?
Shep, in the first of three rounds of critical talks this week, the top U.S. diplomat says there's still a long way to go. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman said the U.S. had proposed relocating missile systems and limiting military exercises, but the U.S. was unwavering in its position that NATO gets to decide the process for NATO membership, and no one goes through that process. No country should have a veto or make decisions for others about their future. The U.S. also adamant that Moscow purposely putting the world on alert by amassing troops at Ukraine's border must draw them down to signal its seriousness.
It took movement to get to this buildup. What we would like to see is for troops to return to their permanent staging grounds, their permanent bases. What we have called for is a return to their barracks. And if we see a return to their barracks, that is an indication of de-escalation.
Russia's deputy foreign minister says the Kremlin needs more flexibility from the West as Vladimir Putin continues to demand a legal guarantee NATO won't expand and taking his troops to the brink of war to secure it. Former ambassador to Ukraine Bill Taylor says it's a tactic by Mr. Putin meant to intimidate the Ukraine, the U.S., and NATO.
If he can accomplish his goals without an invasion, he'd probably be very pleased with that.
Tomorrow, Deputy Secretary Sherman will brief her NATO counterparts before they sit down with Russian negotiators for the first time in 3 years. On Thursday, the Permanent Council of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe will meet to discuss Ukraine. Experts say so long as Russia stays at the table, it's a good sign.
I think the most, by way of deliverables that we could get, is a clear commitment to keep talking after this week. That would be a major success.
Russian negotiators said if talks failed, there'd be a military outcome. Mm. Shep?
Kayla Tausche, thank you. Ukrainian soldiers say they're preparing for the worst. NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel traveled to eastern Ukraine. He met with soldiers there as they try to fortify the front lines.
Ukrainians are welcoming 2022 by preparing for a possible Russian invasion, digging new trenches by hand in the frozen earth. Lined by minefields, the trenches already stretch for miles across eastern Ukraine. Crude defenses that have changed little since World War I. Maxim, a Ukrainian soldier, says he'll fight to the end. But of the talks, he adds, my opinion is wars have always been resolved through diplomacy. We expect that our leaders will solve these issues. Maria, a forward scout, didn't see her four-year-old son for Christmas and may not for many months to come. Hopefully, on the other side, they love their families just like we do and don't want to see bloodshed and death, she says. Russia has also moved in missile launchers and this huge clearing vehicle that can cut a path through forests for columns of tanks. For the news, I'm Richard Engel.
Apple AirTags. They're the little devices meant to help you find your stuff. But what if they're being used to find you? New concerns over stalking and stealing and how long it takes to realize somebody's watching you. A disturbing scene in Brazil, the aftermath of this cliff collapse on a group of tourists in boats below. And a victory for the world's number one tennis player, this one off the court. But now, new questions over a professional photo shoot.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Concerning new reports tonight involving popular devices from Apple. They call them AirTags. They're meant to help you find your things like your keys or your wallet, but police are now warning criminals are using AirTags to track people without their knowledge and certainly without their consent. One Sports Illustrated swimsuit model says a stranger stalked her by planting an AirTag on her. NBC's investigative and consumer correspondent Vicky Nguyen has her story.
I was at the bar alone.
Model Brooke Snader was at a crowded bar in Manhattan when she says someone dropped an Apple AirTag into her coat pocket. The device, roughly the size of a quarter, links to a cell phone through the Find My app, designed to help you track your things. But now it's being linked to concerns about safety and privacy.
When I was almost home, I got this notification on my home screen pop-up saying that I was being tracked, and I had been for a while now. Which is basically when I knew something wasn't right.
Nader estimates the AirTag was in her pocket for 5 hours. The device's owner able to track her every move before she got that alert.
I also didn't know what an AirTag was or anything like that. So I was definitely worried and concerned.
And Nader isn't alone.
Okay, so I think I'm being tracked.
On social media, others reporting finding random AirTags.
I was being informed that there has been an AirTag that has been following me.
Tucked in right here.
Law enforcement agencies across the country are also warning these AirTags can be used to track cars, allowing criminals to steal the vehicles once they're parked overnight.
It's literally been like tracking her car.
To show you how these AirTags work, I'm teaming up with investigative producer Joe Enoch. Joe, what do you got?
Vicky, I got my AirTag.
Okay.
I'm going to put it in your purse.
All right. We'll see what happens.
Bye.
Bye.
I hit the streets of New York City with Joe watching me from his desk.
First stop, gotta warm up, get something to drink.
Must be time for a coffee break.
Able to see the exact stores I go in.
Vicky is definitely doing some shopping at Sephora.
Will it work in the subway?
All right, here we go, underground.
Anywhere there's a cell signal, Joe can see the AirTag in my bag, moving with me.
Vicky is really moving now. My guess, she's on the subway.
Taxi ride.
One last stop.
Finally, time to head to lunch.
Joe's not far behind, using his phone to track my location.
It looks like it's just right up here on the right.
The device leading him right to me.
Whoa. Hey, you found, oh my gosh.
Right there.
There, wow. Yep. You pinpointed me right to my table.
Exactly.
Along with this little guy here.
It was easy.
If you had slipped this in without telling me, I would have had no clue that you were following my every move.
Scary.
Yeah, that is pretty scary.
I didn't receive a warning notification until I got home.
It is now 4 hours after Joe put the tag in my purse, and I just got the alert that there was an AirTag somewhere near me.
Apple says those alerts make it harder for AirTags to go undetected. The company also updated the AirTags to sound this alarm if they're away from their owners for 8 to 24 hours. In a statement, Apple says, "We take customer safety very seriously and are committed to AirTag's privacy and security. AirTag is designed with a set of proactive features to discourage unwanted tracking, a first in the industry, that both inform users if an unknown AirTag might be with them and deter bad actors from using an AirTag for nefarious purposes."
So, Shep, law enforcement agents say if you do find one of these AirTags that doesn't belong to you, or you get one of those alerts, don't go home. Call the police or go to the local police department or a public space. Ask them to come out and investigate. Apple has said it will work with law enforcement to help identify the actual owners of the AirTags. And by the way, each one of these is assigned a serial number, so that should assist in the investigation. Shep?
Vicky, what about for people who have an Android phone? How can they know if AirTags tracking them?
Yeah, Apple says it did release an app for Android devices. You can open it up, you can scan for AirTags. However, it doesn't do it automatically, so you really have to be active about that. You'd have to open the app, scan if you suspect someone is tracking you.
Vicky Nguyen, thanks so much. Called back to Broadway 7 years after leaving the stage, playing multiple roles in one show. Coming up, the creative ways the New York City theaters are finding to backfill casts hit by COVID. And new information from the medical examiner and the death of actor Bob Saget as we look back on the career of a man who was much more than just the head of a full house.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
There is no evidence of drugs or foul play in the death of Bob Saget. That from the medical examiner today. But a cause of death has yet to be determined and could take months. A worker at the hotel where he was staying found Saget dead yesterday afternoon. The 65-year-old actor, best known for dishing out cleaning tips and life lessons, is Danny Tanner on Full House. Today, John Stamos released a statement on behalf of the whole cast of Full House that reads in part, "Bob made us laugh until we cried. Now our tears flow in sadness, but also with gratitude for all the beautiful memories of our sweet, kind, hilarious, cherished Bob. He was a brother to us guys, a father to us girls, and a friend to all of us. Bob, we love you dearly. We ask in Bob's honor, hug the people you love. No one gave a better hug than Bob." Saget was in Florida as part of his I Don't Do Negative comedy tour. That tour was scheduled to go through June. Here's NBC's Joe Fryer.
For decades, Bob Saget was one of TV's most familiar faces, known as America's dad.
Here goes nothing.
Making a name for himself on shows in the 80s and 90s.
Yes, I see how impressed you are.
I did two shows a day, one in class and one in detention.
The actor and comedian was most famous for his role as Danny Tanner on the hit sitcom Full House.
Okay, I have everyone's sandwich just the way they want them.
There's a horse in my living room.
Playing the widowed father of three young girls for 8 seasons.
You girls are the greatest.
His neat, freak character was often uptight.
Mass, just a little soot.
Just a little soot? Did you hear that, Michelle?
I'm afraid I did.
But could always make audiences laugh.
Let's talk strategy.
Hey, man.
Let's forget about strategy.
This next video comes...
During that time, he also hosted America's Funniest Home Videos.
Oh, look at all these wonderful moments. Oh, is this fun.
Saget lent his signature sense of humor to a variety of shows, including Raising Dad and Surviving Suburbia. He also narrated the hit show How I Met Your Mother.
Kids,
It's been almost 20 years since that cold April night in 2013.
Recently, he reprised his Full House role in the Netflix sequel series, Fuller House.
If you take one nibble of that turkey, and I'm going to bite your hand off.
Well, his on-screen characters were mostly family-friendly.
What are you laughing at, Puddinhead?
On stage, his stand-up was sometimes raunchy, talking about that balance on Today in 2014.
I've always had comedy that was both family comedy, whether it be a role that I played or my stand-up, I kind of was a little more unleashed.
You've been real nice. I had a good time. Thank you very much.
A man who made so many laugh, being remembered in Hollywood and in homes across America. For the news, I'm Joe Fryer.
A billion-dollar buy in the gaming world as some of the most popular games ever combine under one roof. Chicago schools closed for a fourth day. Will there be a fifth? The strong words for the city's mayor and three issues on which no one can agree as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. Bitcoin off to a rocky start this year, and that's what's topping CNBC on the money. The crypto king hitting its lowest point today in nearly 3 months. Bitcoin briefly falling below 40,000 before rallying. But the digital currency still down nearly 40% since it hit a record high back in November. Bitcoin leading a pullback across the entire crypto market as investors shed riskier assets with interest rates going up. The video game giant Take-Two acquiring the mobile gaming company Zynga. The Grand Theft automaker paying $12.7 billion to upgrade its social gaming technology. Zynga bringing plenty of that with hits like Farmville and Words with Friends. And a new kind of change about to hit your wallets, or pockets really. The U.S. Mint rolling out new quarters today. They feature five American trailblazers, all women. It's part of an effort to commemorate the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. First up on the new coin, the legendary poet Maya Angelou. Quarters with other honorees are set to ship out later this year and through 2025. On Wall Street, the Dow down 163, S&P down 7, the NASDAQ up 7. Overall, the markets continue their worst start to a year since 2016. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. A small plane crashes onto train tracks. The pilot stuck inside. We talked to one of the cops fighting to pull him out seconds before a train hit. A first for medical science. The last-ditch effort to save a man's life using a pig's heart. And schools in the third largest district in the country remain closed. And it's unclear exactly when students there will return to the classrooms. Just last hour, school officials in Chicago announced they've yet to make a decision, even on classes tomorrow. They say they're still trying to reach a deal with the city's teachers union over COVID protocols. But the president of that union says the sides remain far apart on several key issues. This standoff leaving hundreds of thousands of students and their parents in limbo. Local reporting now from NBC5 Chicago and their reporter, Marianne Ahern.
Day four of no classroom instruction, and here is how CTU President Jesse Sharkey summed up where the two sides stand.
The mayor is being relentless, but she's being relentlessly stupid. She's being relentlessly stubborn.
The teachers' union says these are the three areas of disagreement: remote instruction, COVID testing, and the metric of when to switch to remote learning. Mayor Lightfoot has remained out of the public eye since her Meet the Press interview Sunday.
What I won't do is allow the teachers union to politicize this surge or the pandemic in general. People are nervous. They are scared. We get that. But the thing to do is to lean in to the facts and the science.
Over the weekend, Governor Pritzker offered the city 350,000 tests. But there's no word the city will buy those Shield saliva tests the governor arranged. Those are different than the current nasal tests that CPS uses.
What we need is the support of our school nurses, who the union has not allowed to be activated to help on the front lines with this fight.
For the news, I'm Marianne Ahern.
Well, in New York City, Broadway is extending its COVID rules to try to keep the shows up and running. The Broadway League announced today all 41 theaters will keep their mask and vaccine requirements in place at least through April. Theaters will also require proof of full vaccination for kids, 5 to 11-year-olds. That rule begins later this month. Several of Broadway's biggest shows, including Hamilton and Aladdin, canceled performances over the past month because of COVID outbreaks among cast and crew. Now some shows are adapting and taking creative new steps to help fill empty roles. Here's CNBC's Leslie Picker.
10-year-old Corey Jay usually plays young Simba in The Lion King on Broadway, but one day last week, all the girls playing young Nala were out, so the stage manager suggested Corey fill in.
At first, I didn't know if I wanted to do it because it's not easy doing a role that you never really have done before.
He didn't fit in the costume, so he wore all black. He carried a script on stage for part of the show. In the end, he received a standing ovation.
It was going to be kind of sad if I didn't want to do it because then the curtains would have to close. The curtains have been closed for so long, and now that they're opened back up, I wouldn't want to see them close again.
Omicron has made it harder for the show to go on. The contagious variant has sickened so many members of the Broadway community that many performances have been canceled. Some shows have closed for good. Casting directors like Patrick Goodwin have seen the panic firsthand.
There have definitely been a few calls that have been that have told us we're in a dangerous situation and may have to cancel the production. Is there anyone that you know of that may have auditioned before that we didn't hire or that is newly available that you think could jump in at the drop of a hat if we needed them to?
Even when that hat belongs to a well-known witch. Wicked's female lead was out, as were her two understudies. The show called Carla Stickler, who was driving to Michigan for the holidays to reprise the role of Elphaba. She hadn't performed it on Broadway since 2015.
I was like, okay, before we say yes, I need to sing through everything and make sure that my voice sounds okay, that I like feel confident that I can do this. And so I gave him a little concert in the car.
For the past few years, Carla has worked as a software engineer in Chicago. But when Omicron burst through Broadway, Stickler found herself in green once again, relying on muscle memory to defy gravity.
She kind of lives in my bones. I don't think I'll ever forget how to do Elphaba.
In the meantime, show closures and a skittish audience have caused box office sales to plummet. According to the Broadway League, the industry grossed just $14 million during the usually lucrative Christmas week. That's about a quarter of the sales generated during the same period in 2019. The figure rebounded a bit last week, but still nowhere near pre-pandemic levels. Shep.
Leslie, thanks. A big win for Novak Djokovic in Australia, this one in court. Today, a judge ordered the government to release the tennis superstar from immigration detention in Melbourne and restore his visa. In a tweet, Djokovic wrote in part, "I'm pleased and grateful that the judge overturned my visa cancellation. Despite all that's happened, I want to stay and try to compete at the Australian Open. But the scandal is far from over." Here's CNBC's Perry Russell.
Today, Novak Djokovic's supporters dancing in Australia, celebrating outside of his lawyer's office, blocking the street. Police breaking up the crowd.
What happened? Get this way.
It's been a tennis star saga down under.
It's been a battle for all of us.
Djokovic's family speaking to reporters after a judge ruled he could stay in the country ahead of the Australian Open.
We just want to stand behind him, you know, fight for him in every possible matter, every possible way.
The judge says Djokovic was not given enough time to speak to his lawyer before his visa was canceled. He was sent to a hotel to quarantine. The judge ordered his release.
You know, it's not like someone should get special treatment just because of the status that they hold.
Novak, who is unvaccinated, is being crowned the Novax legend.
I respect Djokovic for standing for what he believes in.
Australian law requires vaccination to get into the country, unless there's a medical exemption. Djokovic's lawyers say he was given an exemption after he had COVID last month. But there are questions about pictures showing him maskless the day after his lawyers say he tested positive. Djokovic is tied for the most Grand Slam singles titles of all time. His mother says this is his greatest victory.
I just hope that it will stay like this. That he will be free and he will play.
The immigration minister could have the final say and remove Djokovic from the country before the Australian Open starts in 1 week. For the news, I'm Perry Russum.
Tragedy in Brazil. At least 10 people dead and dozens injured after part of a cliff crashed on top of boats on Saturday. A warning here, you may have seen this, but it's very difficult to watch. A group of boats carrying tourists gathered near a waterfall when the nearby canyon wall collapsed. It sent a giant piece of that rock crashing. Rescue crews rushed 32 survivors to the hospital, some with serious injuries. Local officials say they're still looking for as many as 20 people who are missing. They deployed divers and helicopters to help with the search. Brazilian Navy reports it'll investigate the cause. Local officials suggest heavy rain in the area may have loosened the slab of rock from that canyon. Location, location, location. The three most important things in real estate. So maybe no surprise that the hottest new market is in the metaverse. Prices of land, as they call it, exploding in just the past few months, some up 500%. We'll take you inside the virtual land grab next. And a pilot pulled to safety after his small plane crashes into the path of an oncoming train. Coming up, we'll hear from one of the officers, part of that daring rescue. Robert Durst is dead. The 78-year-old convicted murderer and New York real estate heir died as a result of multiple medical issues. That's according to his lawyer. Robert Durst was serving a life sentence after a jury convicted him in September of killing a close friend more than 20 years ago. He was also awaiting trial on charges he murdered his first wife back in 1982. Durst won a self-defense acquittal in the 2003 for the death of a neighbor while he was on the run and hiding out in Galveston. He was the subject of an HBO documentary series called The Jinx. In it, he appeared to confess, saying he had, quote, killed them all, of course. A New York City man arrested, charged with threatening to kidnap and kill former President Trump if he refused to leave the White House after the 2020 election. That's according to a criminal complaint filed just today. According to prosecutors, the man phoned in the threats directly to Secret Service officers. The man's name is Thomas Welnicki, 71 years old, from Rockaway Beach in Queens. According to the complaint, Welnicki left his voicemail in January of 2021. I'm going to do anything I can to take out individual one. Oh, yeah, that's a threat. Come and arrest me. That's what they say he said. A federal judge in Brooklyn released Welnicki today on $50,000 bond. He'll be monitored by GPS. His attorney says her client isn't a threat. He was just expressing how distraught he was over the attempts to overturn the election. Police in Los Angeles pulling a pilot from a crashed plane moments before a commuter train smashed into it. They say that plane crashed under the railroad tracks just minutes before the rescue. Body camera video shows officers scrambling to untangle the pilot from the cockpit. The sound here is missing from the first part of the video, but they do manage to pull him out. Then this. A witness captured the crash from a different angle. Look here. You can see cops running away from the tracks and then the double-decker train slamming into the plane, massive chunks of it flying through the air. Los Angeles Fire Department officials say the pilot was taken to a trauma center. No word on how he's doing or what caused the plane to crash. Nobody else hurt. Officer Christopher Aboite joins us now. He was one of the officers who helped rescue the pilot. Officer, it was just incredible to watch. I know you've been talking about it all day long, but can you remember that feeling, hearing the train coming and trying to save this man?
You know, to be honest, I did not even hear the horns going off. The last thing I could remember hearing was that my coworkers were shouting at me to drag him out of the plane, and I could hear the panic in their voice, so I knew I didn't have much time.
And 5 seconds after that, 5 seconds, yeah, sure. The plane hit it.
Yeah, approximately about 5 seconds after we managed to get him out of the plane is when the train collided with the plane.
The striking to me was the struggle to get him out of that plane. It had been going on for a bit. What were you going to do if on that last pull you hadn't gotten him? After all, we now know the train was 5 seconds away.
You know, honestly, I didn't think to that far. I was just, my mind was focused on going and trying to get him out. I didn't know how close the train was, and I actually had never seen the train until after the incident occurred. I just knew I had to get him out. I wasn't concerning myself of what ifs. I just knew I had a job and I had to get him out.
Well, was there a point after you did and everything was fine that you sort of realized what you had just been through and what the possibilities were?
It wasn't until I started to review some of the body-worn footage from the incident and somebody sent me a link to a YouTube page showing us pulling him out of the plane and the train striking the plane shortly after. And that's when it started to really set in just how close it really was for everybody involved in that situation.
Man, what are you hearing from friends and family?
From my family members, my brothers, and my mom and dad, they're all very scared, but they're all pretty proud of me. They just could not believe that I was in that situation, and they just wanted to make sure that I was okay.
Officer Aboitte, I know you sign up for this, and I know there's something special in you and other first responders, but for those of us who don't understand, how do you do this every day, realizing, I mean, if you hadn't gotten him out in that last second, I don't even want to think about what would have happened.
You know, I try to tell myself every day that I'm going to try to go out there and I'm going to do the job that I signed up for. Yeah, there's that risk that something might happen, and I try to not have that in the front of my mind every time I go there, because then I probably wouldn't be able to do my job. I'm thankful that I have a lot of family. I have a wife that's very supportive of me, and you know, I had to apologize to her yesterday for putting her through that. I made sure not to have any of my family members send her any videos or any photos of me pulling the pilot out of the plane until I was at home in front of her so that she could see that I was okay.
She needed to hear it from her hero husband. To you and others like you all over the country, thank you so much. It was really incredible to watch. Appreciate you. Well, the real estate investors are paying millions of dollars for plots of land that don't even exist. It's come to this. At least not where you and I can see the land. They're in the metaverse, the virtual reality space where a digital private island can cost as much as an average American home, legitimately. On the land rush, where there is no real land, here's CNBC's Andrea Day.
So where are we right now?
We are in Decentraland right now.
I'm in my home in New York, and Andrew Kegel, a crypto entrepreneur, is in Toronto, Canada.
We're at Amnesia Nightclub in Decentraland.
But we're together virtually in the metaverse. That's me, that's Andrew, and there's my producer, Chris, with the Mohawk.
This is the museum district.
So what is this place? It's a digital world where you interact with real people, but as cartoon-like characters called avatars.
Andrea, I think you need to save that for the club district. Really, the metaverse is the next iteration of social media.
But there's more.
Here, I will take you guys to some more interesting areas.
Major artists are performing here, like Justin Bieber.
You can go to a carnival, you can go to a music concert, you can go to a museum. All types of different experiences that you can explore and get immersed with.
But what has some investors paying millions to grab a piece of the action? Digital real estate.
Prices have gone up 400 to 500% in the last few months.
Kegel is showing us around one of the hottest worlds in the metaverse right now, called Decentraland. So hot, his company recently dropped nearly $2.5 million on a piece of land here. Another hot world in the metaverse? The Sandbox, where Janine Yorio's company that invests and develops virtual real estate just spent more than $4 million on a parcel of virtual land. That transaction breaking records.
The Sandbox is probably the second most popular blockchain metaverse today.
Her company sold 100 virtual private islands last year for $15,000 each.
Today they're selling for about $300,000 each, which coincidentally is exactly the same as the average home price in America.
So why the digital land rush? Real estate broker Oren Alexander explains.
The digital world to some is as important as the real world. So it's not about what you and I believe in, but it's about what the future does.
And just like property in the real world, here it's also all about location.
There's areas when you first go into the metaverses where people congregate. So those areas would certainly be a lot more valuable than the areas that don't have any events going on.
It's those heavily trafficked areas reeling in big spenders. Here in the sandbox, this piece of land with Snoop Dogg's face on it is owned by the rapper. He's building a virtual mansion on it. And talk about location. Someone just paid $450,000 to be his neighbor.
I think it absolutely matters who your neighbor is. That's kind of true of almost anything, right? It's like a club, and you want to be around people that share similar interests.
Buying land is pretty simple. You can buy it direct or through a developer, but you'll need to build on it and make it interactive.
You can decorate it, you can change it, you can renovate. It's code.
But there are critics.
I would not put money into this that I didn't care about losing. I certainly wouldn't.
Mark Stapp is the director for real estate theory and practice at Arizona State University.
If it continues the way it's going, it is most likely going to be a bubble. You're buying something that isn't tied to reality. It doesn't make a lot of sense, except it may satisfy somebody's desire to participate in some gaming activity.
So why the land rush? Kegel says a lot has to do with Facebook's shift to virtual reality. And because of COVID, since we've all been stuck inside for a long time looking for ways to connect. So what's next? Time will tell how high digital real estate prices go in the metaverse. But unlike the cartoon avatars, the money spent here is real. Shep?
Things I don't understand. Thank you both. In a medical first, doctors in Maryland have used a pig's heart to save a man's life. The patient's 57 years old. He was dying and ineligible for a human heart transplant. That's what his son told the Associated Press. So he agreed to the experimental surgery. Doctors say it's been 3 days and the patient is doing well. They say the surgery shows a genetically modified animal heart can function like a real human heart without being immediately rejected by the body, and that it brings us one step closer to solving the organ shortage crisis. Wow. A huge spike in mobile sports bets hours after New York State gave betting the green light. What the CEO of a major casino is saying about the Empire State's sports betting explosion. And the spotlight it's putting on the national championship game from a league where it just means more. The college football national title on the line tonight. Georgia's Dogs getting another crack at the Alabama juggernaut. Bama dominated Georgia in the SEC championship last month in Atlanta. Tide went into the game as the underdog, but put up 41 on Georgia's top-ranked defense. But that was then. Georgia's coming off a big win against Michigan. And now the Dogs are just four quarters away from winning their first national championship in more than four decades since Herschel Walker was a freshman. Vegas has Georgia as a 2.5-point favorite, but it's worth noting, Georgia hasn't beaten Bama since 2007, 5,224 days to be exact. Crimson Tide tried to win back-to-back natties for the second time under Coach Nick Saban, kickoff just minutes away in Indianapolis. Millions of dollars have already been wagered legally on Georgia-Alabama ahead of tonight's matchup. As we've reported, mobile sports betting launched over the weekend in New York, and it already looks like a big win for the state and the casinos. GeoComply is a software used by sports books to verify you're in a legal place to bet. It reports 5.8 million locations were checked over a 12-hour period in New York on Saturday. That's more than double Pennsylvania and New Jersey's totals during that time. CNBC's Contessa Brewer tracking the Empire State's betting boom. Contessa.
Oh, Shep, it is clear a lot of New Yorkers wanted to bet on sports, and they didn't really want to drive to a casino to do it. Multiple gaming insiders told me the launch of mobile sports betting in New York just crushed expectations. 17 million wagers, according to GeoComply. That's the company, as you mentioned, that makes sure people are gambling inside state lines. This shows the locations of bets across the state over the first 36 hours. And with the mobile sportsbook paying 51% in state taxes, estimates are New York took in more in taxes this weekend than 2.5 years of sports betting at casino sportsbooks. Caesars saw nearly as many bets coming into its New York app as 20 other states combined. I mean, that is success surpassing the wildest expectations.
We had almost a million individual bets taken in 39 hours, the first 2 days. For us to sort of put that in context, the last state we launched was Arizona, which was a 4-day launch. And volumes in New York were about 9x what Arizona was.
It didn't go perfectly, though. For instance, when I tried to download the Caesars app, I couldn't because it didn't recognize that I was actually in New York. When I tried, I was ready to bet. The CEO says all that betting volume in such a short period of time just really highlighted some technical pinch points. He says they'll be working those kinks out before playoffs and, of course, the Super Bowl. But, of course, I'm looking forward to kickoff tonight.
So am
I. Who are you rooting for, Shep?
I got Georgia, a money line bet tonight, since we can.
I got to go look at my bet slip. I know I bet on one of the teams. I just don't remember which one.
Well, I hope you win. Contessa, thank you. The New York Yankees are winning and taking a bat to baseball's coaching glass ceiling along the way. The team promoting hitting coach Rachel Balkovitz to manage its single-A Tampa Tarpons. She's the first woman to skipper a team affiliated with Major League Baseball. The 34-year-old former softball catcher broke into the game as a coach with the St. Louis Cardinals minor league team. When she was originally tapped a hitting coach for the organization, Balkovitz said, "If somebody thinks I'm a trailblazer, great, because hopefully that's creating an opportunity to think it's possible for others." 35 seconds on a race to the finish. 129 million Americans live in places that will not get above freezing tomorrow. That's according to meteorologists at AccuWeather. Wind chill could feel like as cold as minus 40 in some places. United States and Russian officials ending the day of negotiations over Ukraine without a breakthrough. Talks with U.S. and other NATO officials set to continue through the week. And now, you know the news. Of this Monday, January the 10th, 2022, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on the gram and Twitter at The News on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.